If you're an educator, you become a master of your craft as an educator, and you can rise in this profession faster.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Coach Marty Richter, the head men's basketball coach at USC Upstate. Coach Richter began his coaching journey at Simpson College before moving on to South Dakota and then Bowling Green under Coach Dan Dakich. He gained junior college experience at Chipola College and international coaching experience in Ukraine. After a return stint at Chipola, he was then later a part of the historic Dunk City team at Florida Gulf Coast University that made that late NCAA tournament run. He then served as the head coach at Florida Southwestern, compiling a 56-10 overall record in two seasons. From there, he joined Drake University as an assistant, helping lead the team to multiple NCAA tournament appearances. In 2024, he was named the head coach at USC Upstate. And in this episode, we talk about what made the Florida Gulf Coast Dunk City team so special, how to know if you are ready for a head coaching position as an assistant, and what he learned as a first-year head coach in a JUCO position. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Marty Richter.
Dr. Dish Basketball, the number one selling shooting machine in the world, provides the most innovative game-like training with on-demand workouts, multiplayer stat tracking, and instant analytics that allow coaches and players to be better every day. All you have to do is mention Rising Coaches for an exclusive discount on a Dr. Dish shooting machine for your team.
Welcome back, coaches, and thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today, and welcome. We're excited to be able to chop it up. Currently, we have the head coach at USC Upstate, Coach Marty Richter. Coach Richter, welcome to the podcast. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on today, guys.
You got it, man. Thank you.
We're excited to be able to get to have you on here, share your experiences. I know you have some great experiences and a lot of things that people can learn from. But as we always like to do is just bring you back to your roots, where it all started. What brought you into the profession and what ultimately was the moment that kind of made you like, I want to be a coach?
Do you know what brought me into the profession is my first year out, I was a volunteer assistant at a Division III school at Simpson College where I played. And yep. I realized I was student teaching while I was coaching. And I realized I do not want the parents sitting behind the bench yelling at me. And then every night, like I can handle it when you go on the road and a mom comes and you recruit them and they come. But every night in high school, I wanted to be a high school coach. That was my goal. Like I grew up, my high school coach was a history teacher. So I got my history, I got my degree in history, and then I got a PE as K through 12. So I had two options to get a coaching job at any school in the state of Iowa. I didn't want to leave the state of Iowa. And I started coaching for Coach Wilson. Bruce Wilson was my head coach. And I realized how fun it was to go out and recruit and have interaction that way. And then help mold, like he molded me. I was 18 to 22 year old. I was from a family of five. I was the middle child. My parents were awesome. But coach helped me grow to be who I am as a coach and as a person during my college years. So I'm like, I want to do this. And I didn't realize how tough it was. I'll be honest with you. I got lucky because he gave me a volunteer job. You can't get those even nowadays. Those are so tough. So he gave me that job. And then I did it one more year with them and I substitute taught. So I'd wake up every morning at 5 a.m., get my substitute teaching job at 5 a.m., go teach during the day, and then drive to the Division III school, Simpson College, where I didn't get paid. Like, I didn't get paid. Like, it was a volunteer. Like, the guy that was the full-time assistant is now the general manager, Chad Buchanan. He was the full-time assistant, and he didn't make money. And it was like, you know, I was loving it because I was 23 years old doing my job. Like, this is how I got into it. And I realized how fun it was there. But then I worked for two other guys before I got my foot in the door. And I got lucky. I went and worked for Dave Boots, who won 600 games at University of South Dakota. And he was awesome. but it was a GA spot. And I was there for 2 years. And when it got done in the month of May, oh, you try to get a job. And I worked camps. I was a camp guy during the summer for five straight summers. I went and I had my schedule. I did 2 weeks of Iowa camp. I did 2 weeks of Iowa State. I got on at Drake back in the 6 years ago because I worked Creighton camp for 5 years for Darren DeVries. And I worked Kansas camp. That was the best camp. Roy Williams ran the best camp. You worked 3 hours in the morning. You had 6 hours off and you worked 3 hours at night. It was the best camp I've ever worked in my life. It was unbelievable. But I did 12 weeks of camp. So I was just going around doing camps. I end up going out. Before camp season started, I was working in a factory for a month before camp started in June. So the month of May, I built pellets. You guys know what pellets are that are on those semis that, you know, you get like your, you go to Costco and you see all the towels on something.
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I worked for a guy and I had a hammer nails in it for a month. I realized I need to get a real job. What did I do? So I went out and I worked all these camps and I got lucky. I went out and worked Bowling Green's camp and worked for Dan Dockage. I did two straight weeks of camp. I officiated team camp Friday, Saturday, Sunday, did day camp Monday through Thursday, did team camp Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then did day camp. So I went out and worked. No idea. I didn't know Coach Dockage at the time. And I just went out and worked. I go and work Steve Alford's camp next for 2 weeks. During the camp of Steve Alford's camp, I got a call from Coach Dockage to say, hey, we got a director of basketball operations job. Doesn't pay a lot. Would you be interested? I said, yes. When do I need to be there? Tomorrow. I said, okay. So I had to go to Brian Jones at the time, was running the Iowa camp. I said, hey, Coach Jones, I just got an offer to job to go to Bowling Green. Is it all right if I leave camp? He wants me there tomorrow. You better drive back to Waterloo, pack your stuff up, and get out there tonight. So I got in my car. I had a little 1994 Cavalier, and I drove my car across on Interstate 80. And I got there, and I started right there. I literally jumped in, didn't make any money. I mean, you know, kids are coming to you and say, hey, I'll do anything. I literally made $800 a month for 10 months. In 2 months, you didn't get paid. So that's what it was. It was my start in 03, I think it was. And it was awesome. Coach Dockage taught me a lot. Like, everybody has computers. I had deck to deck. I was doing video stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like four VHS things, deck to deck. And you had to get the times just right. And you had to make sure the VHS tape wasn't used too many times. Because if it was grainy and the players couldn't tell and the coach couldn't tell. And you'd get yelled at. And I was like, this is all foreign language to me. But I'm like, I'm doing whatever I'm told to do. And I did it. I got lucky because I worked there for a little over a year doing that. And then we had a guy leave our staff. And I hounded Coach Dockage in the middle of August. He left right after the July recruiting period. So I went on recruiting mode for the job. And I got the job. He hired me and I stayed with him. I was with him, I think, 3 or 4 years there. And then he got Indiana and I joined him back at Indiana when he took over during the Calvin Sampson stuff. So I went up to Indiana for a little bit. I went JUCO, then I went up there and helped him. That's why I got lucky. You know what I mean? A lot of people say you got to do it. No, you just got to get lucky in this business. And by year five, I tell kids this, guys are getting this profession, Coach Majors, and you can attest to this. By year five, whether you can grind it out and do this profession, or it's like, oh, this is way too tough. I don't make any money. I want money. I want this. I'm going to go do something else. And that's by year five. I figured out my ending of year five is when I got my full-time Division I assistant going into year six. I got lucky.
The best part of what you said, man, God, is such a breath of fresh air. Like, we're in such a habit now, society, and you had to wait 5 years to have it. Literally, you were basically on volunteer mode. Even, you know, when you're not making that much, it feels like you're volunteering. You just threw yourself out there and said, this is what I want to do. And you didn't hang any attachments to it. There weren't any ands or there weren't any buts. Like, oh, I'll do this, but it was just like, let me jump in. Like, that alone is some of the best advice young coaches can hear, because, like I said, we're in just such a have it now, need it yesterday society, and you had to play the long game, literally. Like, your coach, your career has been a 573-yard par five.
Yes.
And you hit a 3-iron off the tee.
Just so I use my putter off the tee.
That's fine. You knew where the ball went. You just kept hit your every shot you took. You said, I can find the ball and let me go. And I mean, okay, I'm 472 yards away. Let me whack it. Okay, here we go. Now I'm 390 yards away. Whatever it is, you just stayed the course, literally. So no pun intended. But great stuff, man.
And you, this guy is like, you get in this profession and sometimes you get in, guys get in for the wrong reason. I got in because I'm an educator. Like, I love educating. That is the biggest thing for me. I love mentoring young men and I love educating. I love learning. Like, I learned something new. I'm a college kid. Like, guys showed up yesterday and 2 days ago. I'm a college kid again. I'm 18 to 20 because that's what you are on a college campus. It's a cycle and it's awesome. I love this part of college basketball and coaching because of that. Like, my first three coaches, they were educators. Coach Wilson was an educator. They were educators at heart, at start. And that taught me a lot as a coach. And that's what I'm hoping someone can listen to this and they can learn, oh, geez, if you're an educator, you become a master of your craft as an educator and you can rise in this profession faster. I think in what we're doing, if you master your craft of educating, you can really move forward in our craft.
Yeah, you have to be able to relay that message.
Yeah. And we're in a landscape now where kids play so much. And by the time they get to college, they played five times more games than they've actually maybe had skill development sessions, or not even skill development session, but practices. So they've played a ton of games. They've done a ton of skill, but they may have not been taught the game very well. And so having that teacher's mentality is a really big deal, because our game is lacking teachers. We're not lacking playing games growing up. We're not lacking skill development growing up. We're lacking teaching as they grow up. So guys come to campus sometimes, you will have guys that when you say jump to the ball and get to the midline, that might look at you sideways coming out of high school.
No, hey, coach, you are exactly right. I've had this conversation with a number of head coaches and assistants this last month, of just trying to say, all right, how are you teaching your guys? How are you educating them? Because they learn different now. Like, they don't learn the same way 3 years ago. Like at Drake, 3 years ago, the way they learned is different than the way my guys try to learn last year. So I have to make adjustments as an educator. And that's the beauty of it. Like, now the beauty of it is also is there's stuff everywhere that you can learn from now on the internet. That for you, sure. You don't always have to go to a class and learn from, hey, I got to go to this lecture to learn from something. There's people putting stuff out all the time. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but you can pick. And that's what I spent the last month in saying, all right, how do my guys learn best? How will they learn? And some learn by, hey, some are old school and still can learn by, hey, I can verbalize it to them. Some can watch a video. I think more kids are now watch a video, then apply it, and then watch a video again, and then can go. Like,
you got to see it.
You got to see it. So it's like, do you do the whole to part to whole method of teaching? And that's where you got to figure it out. Like last year, when I got my team, I'm a part to whole guy. That's what I've always been. That's how I learn. Like, you teach them little parts, and then you get it into the whole. And that's education. That's what I thought. I don't know if that's the best way now. I think you've got to show them the end result, then break it down into the parts, and then walk it back to the whole. Because then they see, oh, because the generation, this generation, I don't know if it's X, Z, Gen, whatever it is, they want to know the why before you even start. And us as coaches have to adjust to that. I learned that halfway through the season. I got to do it different next year on teaching.
Yeah.
They can have a better experience and they can learn better. And that's what it's about.
You said one thing that's really a big deal. Because of this, their minds are trained to learn through videos because there's constant input coming through their phone in video form. So it's almost like they're, yeah, how they get things just through video. It's almost like their brains have been trained in a different way. And then even so, with that said, it's on not just the head coach, but the entire staff to find out each guy. Some guys might be like, yeah, coach, I got it. You tell me, I can visualize it. I get it. Mm-hmm. Some guys need to see it. Some guys need to physically walk through it. So this is what it looks like. And then here's the pieces. Like you said, we say this out here all the time. Pete Carroll, when he first got to Seattle, he told his staff, it's on us to learn the learners. It's not on them to come to us and say, coach, I learned this way. No, you got to kick that door down and let them know you're so committed to figuring out how they learn that they're going to meet you halfway. Like they have to feel that. As opposed, you know, you just coach them, come to the building. Okay, we've got our position meetings. We're going to coach you. And then, all right, we go to the field. We'll coach you. See you later. It's like, he said, I want you possessed on how they learn. Like, it's like, don't just step 1 foot over the line. You got to get all the way to the other side of the line and meet them on their side of the street in terms of that. Learn the learners is what he called it. And I love it.
Oh, I love that.
Kids feel that.
They do. You're exactly right, coach. They do feel that. If you meet them and go the extra mile, they know it too. Like they'll go through the wall for you. And I think that's what we miss in college basketball. Everybody's talking about this and that, but like at the end of the day, kids will stay at places longer if they feel that you're really, really invested into them.
For sure.
As players and lifelong people, like people right now in the future, and then, you know, as basketball players. And that's what I think our game misses. People can say NIL and portal. No, at the end of the day, if the kid feels like he is really loved and looked after more than just, hey, if the ball stops bouncing, this guy's really got my back, I think you see less changeover.
Yeah, I agree. No,
I agree.
Because kid playing time ends up usually being the blanket reason.
Yes.
But it's ultimately they didn't feel part of the plans or they didn't feel invested in, like you said. And again, we use the word feel in both those reasons. No, that's a great point, man. Sorry, Dougie, you got off on a tangent there. But
I've even seen like recruiting a kid before. I've even seen a kid say, or his parents or high school coach have said, he just wants to go somewhere where he's going to know he can fit in and be appreciated. He knows he's not going to be a player. Right? Like, I've heard this a couple times this past year. The parents and coaches are literally saying, if you want him, he's yours. As all you guys have been showing him respect,
yeah, you
have him. But that's all he's looking for. He's not looking to make an immediate impact. He goes, and he's one of those that he's going to be a competitor. He's going to want to have to come in. He's going to want to try and earn a spot. Realistically, he wasn't going to. Now, we didn't end up getting him. But the thing is, like, you could tell there's kids out there, especially when you're recruiting them in the high school era, that they're just looking to be appreciated. So that's some great stuff.
For sure. And they gave you the answers to the test, Doug. I know you didn't get them.
Completely. But, like, we kind of pulled back on it.
Yeah, and that's fine. That happens. And sometimes they pull back on you. But, like, they basically said, here's the reason. If you pour into them, you'll get way more than what you asked for.
Yeah. So, Coach, I want to talk about a couple things. I know you mentioned them, but you've worked for great people. Dave Booch, Darren DeVries, Steve Forbes, Dusty May. Like, you have been a part of some great programs and also a head coach of some great programs. But before we talk on your head coaching, I just want to ask, like, that Florida Gulf Coast team, I think we have to bring it up, right? I know we talked about it a little bit. We have to bring it up because that was, like, huge. When you guys made that outbreak, the whole run in the NCAA tournament, you guys just blew everybody's brackets up. Dunk City, that was, what, 2013? That was a huge time, and I'm sure you talk about this a ton, but what was so special about that team that made that so unique and such a deep run?
You know what? The kids were unreal. Coach Enfield took over in 2011. when he took over at Florida Gulf Coast. And it was our first year of being Division One tournament eligible. They went through the 4 years of the cycle, and then it was the first year he just took over. And we were able to keep, we kept Eddie Murray, who was on the Sweet 16, was our backup center. Chase Feeler, who was our starter at the four. Sherwood Brown, who was a walk-on there that ended up being all-league player for us. And then we had Christoph Verdal that came off the bench. And then we added to that puzzle, we added Brett Comer, who is top 25 all-time in NCAA Division I assist as our point guard. Bernard Thompson, all-time leading scorer as our backcourt. And then we added Eric McKnight, a transfer from Iowa State. And then I'm forgetting somebody else. Oh, we added Filip Stavicevic, who is from Serbia, who was our backup four. Could really shoot it. 6'9", could shoot it. So those, and DeJuan Graff was our backup guard. Those were our guys. So we were able, and it wouldn't have happened in today's time because everybody would have went in the portal. Like at that time, Chase Feeler, who ended up being, he's still playing professionally over, he's now in Asia. He's made enough money in Europe where he's been able to get to Asia, which is really good league where he makes a lot of money. He ended up being 0-27 when we took over from the three. Like his last 27 threes didn't make one. And he was thought he was a shooter. He was a versatile four that could really pass and that could catch lobs and dunk. He was terrific. He was the one that would jump up over the sky and just dunk it. And Eric McKnight was the other one. Coach Enfield, his moxie as a person was awesome. Like we played an elite schedule that year. We went to Duke, and I tell people this all the time. Went to Duke, hammering indoor. First, that was my first time ever. It was awesome. We were up 29-28, Coach Majors. We're cooking. Cooking. 5 minutes. And I know this like the back of my hand. 5 minutes and 43 seconds left in the first half. All of a sudden, you look down, Coach K stand up. All of a sudden, you next thing you know, they went on a 22-0 run to close out the half. And then they went on an 8-0 run to start the second half. They went on a 30-0 run. And I tell people this, we played Duke at Duke. We played VCU. Shaka just was coming off. I can't remember if it was Final Four, if it was. It was, I don't know, was it that year or the year before?
I think it might have been either, it might have been 11 when they went.
Yes, that's right.
11 or 12. It might have been 11 because actually it might have been 11 because Butler went 10 and 11.
That's
and then
right.
I think VCU was that second time that Butler went. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
They had a great team. He had a kid named Briante Weber. They pressed us. It was our opening night. We got beat by 30 there. He had 9 steals. He just about had a double on steals. He had 15 points and 9 steals. So we played them. We played Iowa State. We played St. John's. And we played Miami at home with Shane Larkin, who won the ACC regular season and tournament championship. But we beat Miami. So our guys had an aura to them. So when we got Georgetown, our players were excited. Like, they didn't know any different. Georgetown won the Big East, and they were terrific. They had Otto Porter, who was a lottery pick, I think pick 3 or 4. Our guys weren't intimidated. A lot of times you go in those games, you're intimidated. And the speed and the physicality is such a big difference. We were long and we were fast. And we had, and our best player, Sherwood Brown, had physicality at the small four. And he had a lot of moxie to. He was tough. So like our guys all joined in, and Brett Comer was an unbelievable leader. Like when I say unbelievable, he was from freshman year, he was a 4-year starting point guard. He would never played 4 years at Florida Gulf Coast. He would have been at
SEC. Yeah, been in the SEC or
like,
something.
Florida for a year, Miami for a year, Florida City, like everybody else. But he was unreal as a point guard. And he was the end, he made us go. The other guys are really good players. He made us go. And he was so good. And Coach Enfield was so good at allowing the guys to play through mistakes. And sometimes coaches, everybody's different. I mean, I've had, I think, 9 separate bosses. And everybody has their strengths and everybody has their weaknesses. And I thought Coach Enfield's biggest strength was his ability to let his guys go. and not get in the way. And he did it at USC with that his really good team. They went to the Elite Eight a couple of years ago with Evan Mobley in that group. Just as he would let them go and play, and a lot of coaches can. And my team last year, we weren't very good, but that was something I took from him. The pace that we played at Florida Gulf Coast is something that people couldn't replicate. Like, you could get in and play, and you think you would have more speed than us. Our speed end-to-end was so fast. We were so fast, and that's what made us great. And we were unselfish as a group. They were just unselfish. I think we had four guys double figure scores, which you don't see a lot in college basketball. And 5, 6, 7, 8 were all between 5 points and 8 points. So we scored enough points where guys felt a part of it every night.
Yeah.
That's important. Coach, you lived it with your guys' national runner up team. Like, everybody gets to eat. Everybody's happy. And that's what cooked really well.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, but everything you laid out was so good, because absolutely you had speed. You had absolutely great coaching with a great vision. Mm-hmm. You had speed. You had athleticism. You had depth. And you had leadership. So you put all those things together, you got a chance, man.
You got a chance.
That was a special team for sure.
We didn't do anything. Coach, you've been on the other side. I have never been on the other side. I've always been a lower seed. So, like, you go in, the higher seed always is like, we're going to win this. They're going to roll over eventually. When you're the lower seed, you got a chip on your shoulder. And we played in Philly, and it was the best environment ever because they love an underdog story. Like, that's what they love. Like, we were, like, first half back and forth. We had some great moments. And that second half, when we got on a roll, oh, my gosh, you would have thought we were playing at home in Alico Arena in front of 4,500. It was like 20,000 people cheering. 20,000 people cheering for us and about 150 people cheering for Georgetown.
that's awesome. Exactly how awesome. The Oakland-Kentucky game this past – I was at that game, and you can just hear after Golkey hit a couple threes, the whole thing was for him. And they didn't even care about the game anymore. He was coming off screens, staggers, all that. Everybody was just screaming, give him the ball. And let alone he did it, hit a couple more, like the place erupted. So I can 100% understand how it would feel, especially if you guys are throwing guys through the air and getting all the lobs. No, that's great, though, to be able to, like, especially experience something like that as a coach, as a player, doesn't matter who it is. I'm sure that would be a great experience to be able to just be a part of. And I don't know if you caught my reference there from semi-pro, throwing guys through the air. You guys – yeah. Okay. I was hoping.
You know what is great, and everybody forgets this, is that group of guys, players, managers, coaches. Right now, like, I can tell you we're – Coach Norris is at, I think he's at Villanova. He was at Maryland. I think he went over to Villanova.
He did. Kevin Norris. Yep.
Yeah. Coach Fly is at Florida State. Coach Joey Cantens, who was our director of basketball operations, is a head junior college coach at Daytona State, was longtime coach overseas. They were number two in the country all last year. Coach Enfield's at SMU. We had Bobby. I can't remember Bobby's last name. He's now an assistant at Portland. We had one other. We had Chase Goldstein, who's now an assistant at Duquesne. We had, there was another young man. I'm forgetting his name, but he was an assistant at Oklahoma State under I'm forgetting his name. The last head coach of Oklahoma State.
Mike Boynton. He's a Mike Boynton. Mike.
So we've had everybody got rewarded. Like, that's what, like, Rising Coach. That you guys are. This is an awesome show, but people don't realize. When you win and everybody in the organization gets I got rewarded. I ended up getting a head junior college job and then got on at Drake. And then now I got this opportunity because of Dunk City. Like, everybody gets rewarded when you win. And we're trying to get a message to young coaches. That's what at the bottom line, that's what it's about. Help the organization be successful. Sometimes winning in an organization is going 16-15.
That could be a great season.
Like, when we took over working for Coach DeVries, we took over at Drake. There was 113 years of college basketball played at Drake before Coach DeVries took over. They had 5 20-win seasons. Well, Coach DeVries coached there 6 years. He had six 20-win seasons. So when we got to 20 our first year, that was a great season. It didn't matter what we did. We won 20. That was a great season. And then we did it again and did it again. And that's why I like my message to like my young guys on my staff is like, do whatever it takes to help the you got to learn in the process, but help the organization be successful. And everybody's success is different. Coach Major was at Ohio State. They had Mike Conley Jr., who was an unbelievable point guard. Their success is when we get to the second week in the NCAA tournament. And then when you go further than that, Coach, you guys are even looked upon happier. You're happier. Like everybody is different.
You're right. But the funny thing is we had to create a reason for Mike and Greg to want to come. And our very first year was a NCAA self-imposed sanction year. And we couldn't go to the NCAA tournament. We ended up going 20-12, but our highlight was beating Illinois, who was undefeated on the last last day of the regular season. They were 29-0. They come to campus, and Gus Johnson calls a game, and we hit a three to win by two. But the point is, you know, it didn't all just start. Mike and Greg were a byproduct of some things getting laid out foundationally. Yeah. We would have loved to have them the whole time. You know, that was year three before those guys showed up. So, yeah. But you're right. Like winning looks different for everybody. And it's so true. Just, I have a friend who's he's a fantastic head coach. And I think one of the things that wore him down last year was he felt like he was coaching two teams. And he was trying to get the staff to understand the importance of the big picture.
Yes.
And I think some guys may have gone to join him because of it's a chance to maybe launch themselves as opposed to let me go in here and help this place win. So it gets back to what you said. Like the bottom line is when you win, they come looking for everybody. That's just the way it works. NFL, you see it all. Staffs get raided in the NFL. It's just the NBA, same thing. But winning does still matter.
Winning matters. Sure. Like, here's a guy that's a mid-major coach right now, Dan Earl. And I don't know if you guys ever had Dan on here or not, but Dan was at VMI. Dan was successful for VMI, really successful. Like, he built it. It was a process. And he never went to the NCAA tournament. Never. But he got Chattanooga off of what he was able to do at VMI and his successes there. And that's the thing that every coach, you picked your phone up a minute ago and said, this is what how people learn. This is all also you pick your phone up and this is how people always look and they always judge themselves off other people instead of just worry about yourself. And as a young coach, I'm still a young coach. I'm a young head coach and I'm a young coach still. I'm still at the beginning. I still consider myself at the beginning stages. Some people say you're old, but my kids say I'm old. But don't judge yourself on other people. Just always look in that mirror. What did you do for yourself to get better in your craft today? What are you going to do tomorrow to be better? What are you doing to help the organization to get better? And if you do those things every day, well, you're going to get rewarded. Hey, I got caught up for a long time. My wife had to talk me off the ledge. It's going to happen for you. You just have to be patient. Because I was looking at, hey, my buddy got this job. I'm 40.
FOMO. You're getting FOMO.
Yeah. And I'm like, I need it. She's like, oh, it's going to happen whenever it happens. And this one happened. I got lucky. Coach Dickerson did a great job here. Unbelievable person. Unbelievable coach. Did an awesome job here. If he doesn't leave, I don't get an opportunity here. And I got lucky to get this one just because he knew somebody from South Dakota that we had a connection with. People are like, how'd you get that job? Who'd you? I'm like, I got lucky. Like,
a lot of luck.
I worked. Like, you got to work and master your craft. But I got lucky. The guy that my AD here was really good friends with one of my former players at University of South Dakota that he ended up becoming a GA when I was at Bowling Green. So we stayed in touch all these years. And then he got out of the profession. But him and my AD were close. I called him and said, hey, do you know he was at South Dakota? I don't know the AD here. He's like, yeah, I'm really good friends with him. I'll call him right now for you. And that's how. And then the guy that was running the search was an Iowa guy. So I got lucky with an Iowa guy. Us Iowans do stick together. Let me say that. Iowans stick together. There's Iowans everywhere. We all stick together.
I love it.
That's our DNA as Iowans.
No, you know, that's great.
The best thing you said about luck is part of it, but luck is also a byproduct of intentional positioning.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you, yeah. And I don't mean to, you know, like you were planning to get this job. I don't mean that by intentional positioning, but intentionally meaning like being fully feet dug in where you are.
Yes.
And doing all the right things where you are and treating that like it's the only job in the world. That kind of intentional positioning does breed luck.
It does.
Luck is a byproduct of those things. So sometimes people think luck just happened and something just fell out of the sky and landed on the guy. I don't know about that. I think it's more of intentional positioning and that being this job I have, it's the only job in the world. And I'm going to let the next thing hit me upside the head when the time comes and it'll be obvious.
You say that, Coach, and there was a guy I worked for, Joe Dooley. You guys all know Coach Dooley. I got to work for him for 2 years, and he would say that all the time. It's like, hey, this is not your time yet. You're going to get an opportunity. You're preparing yourself now. And he would talk to me about that because at the time it was 10, 12 years ago. So I was late 30s. So I thought I was ready then. And I'm glad I got to work for him because he got his first job when he was young at East Carolina. He got it young, like early. And then he left and then he came back. It's like, Marty, it's just, you got to keep preparing yourself every day and keep working forward and don't get caught up on, hey, Jimmy got this job or Marcus got this job or so. Just keep working on your process. And when your process and you work on your habits and create good habits for your coaching career, it may work out for you. It may not, but you don't ever worry about that. You just worry about, hey, be in your moment. And that's why I told my players yesterday, I said, I've worked for three different head coaches. The last three head coaches all became millionaires. Coach Enfield, Coach Dooley, and Coach DeVries. I said, I didn't do it. I worked for him. That was my job. My job was, I never worried about whether Coach DeVries was up for jobs throughout our career for 6 years together. I never went to him and asked him, hey, are you involved with this? I said, that's not my lane. Never worried about it. Like, my lane was to go into my office, do my job, get my players better, work with my academic group. Hey, if he gave me alumni, if he gave me community service, he gave me camps, whatever task he gave me, I was the head coach in those tasks, and I did those to the best of my ability. And that's what I'm trying to preach to my staff here. That's what you got to do. And that's the beauty of this business. Like, sometimes you work for guys and they micromanage you, and sometimes you work for guys and hey, you're the head coach in that task. You tell me what I need to do now as a head coach to help you. If you need me to step in, I'll step in because I've done it. Like,
I like that. The head coach of each task. I got to say, though, when you said it's not your time, that's the toughest pill to swallow as a young coach. It really is. It's sitting there and saying, it's not my time. I got to wait a couple more weeks. It could be years. It could be a decade for all we know. But that it's not your time. When is it going to be? It's the toughest pill.
Hey, I thought it was my time last year in the middle of early April. Coach DeVries took West Virginia. I tried to get Drake. I've been at Drake for 6 years. I thought I was going to get it. I didn't get it. Just wasn't the right. It wasn't my time at that time. It was tough for me to swallow. I had to lay my head down. 3 days later, I got lucky enough to get involved with this job.
Yeah.
And it just works out. In you as a coach, you just have to keep, be in the moment that you're at. We always tell our players to be in the moment, be your 2 feet where you're at right now. Don't worry about, what's going on in the portal, what's going on in the NIL world, what's going on social media. Just be in your moment here. Be in Spartanburg here. Don't be somewhere else. And us coaches sometimes don't live by that, and we have to live by that.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. The kids are going to model what they see. And they don't get enough credit for knowing.
Yes.
If a coaching staff or individual coaches are really like riding and rolling with them, or you got one foot out, or what are you thinking, or, you know, you're not really engaged today. Their antennas are incredible. They're going to model what's modeled to them daily. So it's great that you got your staff on the right track with that one, for sure.
Coach, let me ask you this. You were talking about, and we cover Florida Gulf Coast, yep. as you were as an assistant. You then end up taking your first head job, Florida Southwestern. And then I know you go, obviously, back to Drake as an assistant, but then now where you are now, USC Upstate is a head. So you've had two positions where you've been head coach. When, for, I guess, going back to that Florida Gulf Coast and then stepping into your first head coaching position, my question is, like, when you were going into that first head position, what was the decision, or I guess, like, how did you know you were ready to take on that first head coaching position?
I had no
idea.
Did
it just come about? Okay.
I won't lie to you. I thought I was ready. Like, I thought I was ready 2 years prior, and I didn't get the Florida Gulf Coast job. I was up for it. Coach Dooley got it. I stayed on, worked for Coach Dooley. I love Coach Dooley.
Yeah.
Halfway through the second year, Coach said, "Hey, you're ready to be a head coach." He said that to me, and I was like, oh, thank God. Because sometimes you coach, and you just don't – you think you're ready, and you have your mentors and your people in your corner saying, hey, you're ready. But you and I didn't – we knew each other, but we didn't really know each other. And now that we've worked 16 months together, I was like, oh. And Coach Dooley, he coached real dudes. Like, he won national title. I was like, okay, I felt better. Coach Docky said the same thing to me. He goes, when I got to the late, he's like, hey, you're ready to be a head coach. And I felt better when I heard it from those guys, because they've gone on, they've been very successful people as coaches, as assistants. They've been around it. When I stepped in, I got lucky when I took over at Florida Southwestern. I took over a program that never existed for 30 years. They had a program from 65 to 92. They shut it down. Stayed open. They brought athletics back basically 30 years later. And I was the second head coach in school history, but they haven't had a program. We didn't even have a gym. So it was my first year was I literally had no staff, no team. I had to recruit. I had to organize. I had to put everything in play of what I wanted our brand to look like. And
start fresh, at least.
Started fresh. Like, yeah. I literally tell people, like, one of my assistants, Anthony Murphy, was my first recruit. Him and his brother, he had a twin brother. They were my first recruits. And they committed to me with my vision of the program. Like, I had a vision. And they committed to that. There's a kid named Shaq Carter that ended up going to Eastern Florida, that ended up going to Rutgers. I lost him because he couldn't see the vision. Like, I just remember that plainly, because I wanted him so bad, because he was a 6'10", physical five man that was really good player. And he ended up being all Juco All-American. Like, I was so mad because I had to play against him too. But it was a vision, and I got to do it for a year. But what I didn't feel great about was I haven't really run a practice. You've done workouts, but run a practice. Coach Enfield would come up with a practice plan, and he would let you do your area and the head coach in those areas. Coach Dooley do the same thing. Coach Dockich, same thing. Coach, you know, all the coaches I worked for, same thing. And I didn't do anything for a year besides, hey, I got to figure out where are we going to change when we don't have a gym for the high school practice. And then when we go to this high school practice, and then how am I going to do laundry, and where am I going to do this, and what's our logo? You know, they got a logo, but what am I going to put my imprint on the logo? What is our practice gear? Like, they didn't have anything. Like, I got to go get basketballs. I got to go get everything that you can think of that's in a program. They didn't have, because they haven't had it. So I had to do that for a year, which was an awesome experience. It got me to this experience, because that is, you're at ground zero. You're trying to make people believe what your vision is. When you're a low major head coach, you're at ground zero. You're trying to get kids to believe you have a vision for them and your institution and your program. And those years helped me. I got lucky. Like, we didn't play our first home game until December, I think, like 4th, something like that. We played our first 11 JUCO games on the road. But now it's part of it. And we drove two white vans to all of our games. I had to figure out, how do I save money? Well, a bus is $2,500 a day. Those two white vans I go to Enterprise and get, $100 plus another probably $100, $200 I get to save 20. And they prepared me for this job, because you got to save in this area to put in this area to help. And that experience really helped me. Like, it taught, you got to coach, you got to develop, you got to move forward every day. You can't look at it and say, oh, that kid just got an offer, he's better than my players. No, you just got to worry about your players and help them get to their next step. And don't let them worry about, hey, go there. No, like, I had a kid, Tyler Cheese, that went and played for Coach Gross at Akron. Tyler Cheese, my first year, he couldn't see. Like, literally was on the court squinting. My wife says to me, she said, hey, I'm going to take Tyler to go get his eyes checked at Target. I said, why is that? She goes, I was sitting in the first row, and he couldn't see. The ball was coming at him, and he was squinting, and he couldn't see. So she took him. She spent 3 hours at Target helping him figure out how to put contacts in, because he's never – and that, those are the things that helped me. Tyler ended up being an All-American for me and end up going on to play for Coach Gross at Akron. It was a terrific play. Tyler had Florida State, Wichita State, Ole Miss. I had to sit Tyler down during this, and this is part of my strength as a coach, I think. It's like, Tyler, what do you want for your next stop? This goes back to the junior college. What do you want for your next stop? Coach, I want the same experience I had as a sophomore at my next spot. I said, okay, if you want that experience, Ole Miss, Florida State, Wake Forest, Wichita State are probably, you're going to do what you did as a freshman. Come off the bench, score 8 to 10 points, have a really good experience, but not be the guy. Well, I want to score. And Tyler had a game of 42 points, 15 rebounds, 17 assists against Anthony Simmons, IMG. Jeez. He was terrific. Like, he could just impact the game. And he's, I want to have the ball in my hands a lot, coach. I said, well, Coach Gross is a good friend of mine. I think that'd be a great experience for you. So he went and visited, and I had to make decisions, not decisions. I had it laid out. Like, I had a kid that wanted to go to the highest level. That's all he wanted. He didn't care. I'm like, okay, this is what you're going to get. He went there and he realized, oh, coach wasn't lying to me. You got to be honest with kids. And that's what the experience at Florida Southwestern really taught me, is how to be really honest without hurting their spirits. Because you got to be honest with them. You got to say, hey, we had Tramell Murphy, and Anthony's on my staff. His brother, Tramell, he was a first-team All-American. He went and visited Oregon, went and visited San Diego State. He ended up coming to play for us at Drake. And I said, you can go to Oregon, but you're going to be Coach Altman's 7th, 8th guy probably. I said, that's just how it is as a junior college guy. You're a really good player. You fit coach. I said, you go to San Diego State. I don't know their program as well, but they value what you are. You're a tough, grim, grimy, tough, physical guy. 6'6", can guard. Mm-hmm. Positions, like, you fit them. I said, I don't know their program as well as Coach Altman's. I said, but you're going to be a really good player wherever you go. You got to figure out whether you want to be a starter or if you want to have to fight harder to play as a top 8 guy. And that's what that experience gave me, from the blacktop of having no arena to having a beautiful arena that they now play the City of Palms, and they have college Thanksgiving tournaments in, to the end where you're helping guys move on. And it taught me a lot as a coach, because I couldn't worry about whether that junior college was better than mine or this and that. I was a new junior college. Mm-hmm. I was at ground zero. Like, I was trying to recruit against CSI, Salt Lake, Northwest Florida, Chipola, Eastern Florida, Vincent. I was trying to recruit against all of them. I never won a recruiting battle. Didn't. Like, I tell people that all the time. I didn't. Because when you're new, you don't win those battles. You try to get in them, but you got to then, you got to, it brought me back and it said, you know what? I got to be smart on what I'm doing. It took me back to that. That experience was awesome because it was like, it was my baby. Hey, I've been gone since 2018 and it's 2025. That program, I still call it my own program. I still call the arena my arena. Like my wife. No, that's my arena. It's on TV. I'm watching it. I don't care who's playing in the games there. I'm watching because I had great memories there.
Yeah.
And that junior college experience set me up for this experience. It set me up for Drake, too, because at Drake, we weren't beating anybody. Like, when we didn't beat anybody for Tucker DeVries. Tucker DeVries is an All-American level player. We did, but, like, he was coming to us at Drake. Sleeping with his mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that was a done deal. Yeah.
That was the best. We were getting him.
Done deal. Yep.
We had Liam Robbins, who's playing in the NBA right now. Liam was at Sunrise. Nobody recruited him. He was a 7-foot kid. Nobody recruited him. He's now playing in the NBA. He ended up leaving us, went to Minnesota, was an honorable mention all Big Ten, went to Vanderbilt, played for Coach Stackhouse, was defense player of the year in the SEC and first team all SEC, and now he plays in the NBA. Like, we had Nick Norton. We didn't beat anybody. Who's now on staff at Indiana? Brady Ellingson, transfer down from Iowa. My junior college experience helped me in that. Like, we took Roman Penn, who's the all-time assist guy at Drake. We didn't mean he left Siena. We didn't have to beat people for him. DJ Wilkins, who's our all-time three-point shooter at Drake, he played for me at FSW. He had no Division I offers out of Sunrise Christian. He came to me. I redshirted him because he was not beating other guys out. Awesome player. But he was a freshman and those guys were sophomores. So I'm like, I'm going to save your year, buddy. And that was tough. I'm going to save your year. You don't think it's good, but it's going to be great for you. It did, because he was able to play, didn't play, practice every day, got better, went to Drake, started from day one when he went to Drake. Was a five-year player, won 25-plus games a year for five straight years because of COVID, played in three NCAA tournaments, I think it was, all-time guy. But, like, those experiences at Florida Southwestern helped me get to where I'm at now, because you've got to dig under the rocks to find different players. You've got to go out. You got to trust these things. A lot of people trust – they'll look at it and they'll trust their phone. Hey, he got an offer from Coach. We need to offer him. I'm like, have you watched him? Have you talked to him? No. I said, I want to talk to him first, because he may not fit. Coach, you did this at Charlotte. You took over a job in the spring. It's so tough. That first recruiting class is so tough because you don't get the individual time. Not everything aligns when you don't have the individual time with them. That second class is, you have that individual time because you have the course of the year. And people wonder, no, you don't, because of the transfer portal. Low majors, we struggle in the transfer portal. It just is, because guys are moving and shaking and they're trying to go up. And they're not trying to stay the same. They just, you know, that's what it is. And so I went the junior college route and did that a little bit more. I took four junior college kids and I got to spend a lot of time with them. I went out and saw them personally as a head coach during the course of the year. I got to see him practice. I got to sit down with him face to face. And I figured out, oh, he's about what I like. Because, like, I built my program at Florida Southwestern on the four C's, and I built it here on the four C's: culture, competitiveness, chemistry, and whatever. I forget my fourth one. I'm drawing a blank right here. I'm drawing a blank here. Culture, competitiveness, chemistry, character on the four C's. Really simple. My wife thinks I'm really corny when I use it. I'm like, no. it's me. Like, it allows me to figure out, hey, I tell kids, they're like, chemistry, what's chemistry even mean? I said, do you mesh with our staff? Do you mesh with your teammates? How's that go? Like, I based my staff on this. Like, I had an opening this spring, and I was able to – I got lucky enough to bring a guy that I worked with at Drake back with me. We had a great chemistry together. Now, it's different now that I'm the head coach and he's an assistant. Before, we were just assistants together. But that chemistry piece is really important. People forget.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
We saw Florida. Like, Florida's chemistry this year was unreal. Those guys, they were down. You look at it in the NCAA tournament, they should have got beat by UConn. They were down 9 points, I think, with 3 minutes to go. They had one more game against Tennessee, Texas Tech. They were down, I think, 8 with 2.5 minutes. But their chemistry, they're all moving in the right direction. And I go back to your question about FSW. That's what all this is. That experience taught me how to work in this realm, because I didn't have as many eyeballs on me then. So I got to test things out that you normally don't get to test out on your first job as a Division I head coach.
Yeah. No, the other best thing about it is you didn't have a choice but to run your own race. Like, you couldn't get FOMO while you're trying to build Florida Southwestern. Like, you're wasting your time if you're looking around. You were the head coach, the recruiting coordinator, the ops guy. Mm-hmm. You were in about 5 different hats. So for you to take even 1 second to look and see what anyone else is doing would have just been a complete waste of time and energy. So it literally forced you to run your own race. You didn't have a choice. But that helps you, because you maintain that mentality the rest of the way of just, hey, just run your own race. Run your own race.
And you guys are both coaches, and you know this. If you run your own race, it's so refreshing. Like, you wake up every morning, I'm refreshed. I'm an energetic – if you guys can't tell, I'm an energetic guy. Energy. Like, I don't drink caffeine. I don't drink soda. I don't do any of that. I wake up and I got a lot of energy. And if you stay in your own race, in your own lane, oh, man, good things happen to you. I would say this to young coaches. And I like this about my career. I enjoyed this about my career. I coached every level besides NAI basketball and NBA. I've been able to coach a D3, junior college, as an assistant and as a head coach, low major, mid major. I got lucky enough to be at Indiana with Coach Dockage for 6-7 weeks. So I say I'm high major, but I wasn't high major. I coached overseas in Ukraine. So I had a lot of different experiences. I worked for ESPN, and I tell people this all the time. My 5th year was the year that I had to get a job. Well, then I was out of a job working for ESPN for Paul Biancardi and Paul Coach Majors. And I wasn't making any money, but I was doing it to stay involved in the game. And I did it for 2 years, and it was the best 2 years I spent in my career for my contacts. I had developed contacts with people in the recruiting world that I would never have gotten if I would have stayed at Bowling Green, or if I would have stayed at Florida Golf, just contacts I was able to get. But I had to take a step back and figure out no job is above me. Like, I had to go get the next job. No job's above me. Like, whatever job I can get, I got to take. And sometimes people forget that. And you, as a young coach, you got to put yourself out there. And sometimes, hey, yeah, the pay's not what you want it to be, but you make the most of it. I ate a lot of peanut butter and jellies in my career. A lot of mini burritos and peanut butter and jellies.
Uncrustables? You had Uncrustables?
Uncrustables were too expensive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you got to get your own. Yeah, 99-cent loaf of bread. That's right.
I did that for a long time. My wife and I, hey, she didn't know what she was getting herself involved in. She had no idea. She didn't know. She had no idea. It's a great journey. And, hey, you guys have gone through this journey, and I'm going through it too. And it's the whole point of Rising Coaches is to help guys take that next step. And I'm hoping my story can help someone take that next step. I looked at my guys I looked up to in our business was Steve Forbes, and he has no idea I even looked up to him, and Chris Jantz, both Iowa guys. And I always looked at their careers and saw what kind of did. They were junior college coaches, assistant junior, and they just worked their way up. And it took them like 27, 28 years to get their shot to be a head Division I coach. That's why I always kept going back. I'm like, oh, I got time. You know what I mean? Like, I looked at those guys and I said, hey, I got time. They had no idea I was looking up to them. Like, they didn't know that. Like, I was looking at their career and following their career and seeing what they could do. And it's unreal. Like, you just, you figured out as a young coach who you can kind of look up to and who you can, who can possibly mentor you. And you go through it. I always tell people this. I tell my players this. And Coach Majors, you probably did the same. You've got to get mentors. I've got three mentors that are not even in the business of basketball that help me in my daily life experiences. And that is what you need in this world. And if you can do that as a young coach, do it. Take advantage of it. There may be a booster. Like, one of mine was a booster at Florida Gulf Coast. He was a mentor of mine. He ran a bunch of companies, sold to companies, was highly successful. But he would give me life lessons during the way. You sometimes just, in the coaching world, sometimes it's always the coaching talk instead of about life. And it was really good for me.
Well said, man. Well said.
No, there's definitely a lot that people could be able to take away. You've had some great experiences. You've simply grown in the industry, as you said, right? You've gone from Division III to a Division I assistant to a Division I head coach and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of steps in between, and we didn't even cover half of them. So just to give everybody an idea, like, there have been more steps. You didn't just wake up one day, go from Simpson all the way to FGCU, and then now you're the head at USC, right? There's obviously a bunch of steps and a bunch of time and a bunch of growth, as you said, bringing you back to your beginning, the uncertain days. And I'm glad you covered those, because that at least gives everybody an idea of the rough patches that you have to go through. Everybody sees the glory of being a head coach at USC upstate, but nobody talks about the days where you were struggling, it was tough, eating PB&Js. And
It is. Like, this is a business. Like, I tell people this. I heard this from a really good friend of mine that we worked together at Chipotle, Jake Hedrick. Jake Hedrick said this to me when I got the job. He goes, getting a head Division I job is more difficult than getting into the MBA, because there's 450 MBA jobs. There's only 365 head Division I coaching jobs. So when you start to put it that way, it's so tough. If you base your whole career off that you're going to be a head Division I coach, you're in it for the wrong reasons. Just if you talk to your team about, hey, it's only about wins. No, it's about the process and your habits and how you learn. And if you get the opportunity to win, great. If you get the opportunity to be a head coach, great. But it's the process, because there's only 365 of these suckers. And coach, you've been lucky enough to be a head coach at a really good institution. You had great experiences. They're tough. They're tough. And they're tough to keep. They're even tougher now to keep because of the portal and the NIL.
Right.
But no, you can't put your whole career on make or break. I'm a Division I head coach. Cannot do that. You have to put your career on the process. Am I helping the 18 to 23-year-olds grow? And can I communicate with them later? Like yesterday, I talked with Brett Comer for an hour. I haven't coached Brett since 2015, but we talk once, twice a month, because I've enjoyed our experience together, but I also – I may be a mentor to him, you know, and that's what it's about. That's what our job is.
100%. Couldn't say it better.
Coach, we just want to thank you, as always. We want to thank you for being able to be on here, share your story, share your experiences with us, because I know we say it to everybody, but it's truthfully, you know, if it wasn't for people like you and coaches like you that are willing to give feedback back to everybody out there, everybody listening, we wouldn't be able to have this platform, let alone people wouldn't be able to learn and grow in ways that they have been. So thank you very much for being able to share your time. And we really do appreciate, you know, everything that you shared with us today.
Coaches, I appreciate it. You gave me, I already got my, you taught me one new thing today. Pete Carroll, man. Learn the learners. I already wrote it down. I got it wrote down. I got it wrote down on my notepad, man. I was like, hey, I'm like, that is awesome. Because you got to learn. Like, you got to be an active learner. As a rising coach, guys, This is an awesome podcast to listen to. I listen to it. Mike was on here the other day. I steal ideas from Mike. Like, it's a place for coaches to steal ideas. Please, young coaches, get on this. Listen all the time. Please listen, because it's really good. It's really good podcast.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And everybody out there, thank you all for tuning in. As we always say, listening in, giving us your time, being able to learn from all these coaches. It's definitely great. But thank you all for tuning in. And everybody, that is another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, keep working, keep rising, coaches. We'll talk to you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.